Acatra Foundation presents the Acatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Acatra AI. Welcome, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into something really special, a deep dive into Trevor Noah's incredible memoir, Born a Crime, Stories from a South African Childhood. Our mission, like always, is to pull out the most important bits of knowledge, the key insights for this really powerful book. We want to give you a shortcut to understand its impact and why it still matters so much today. And the premise itself is just, wow. Trevor Noah was quite literally born a crime. That's the title, but it's also the reality under South Africa's apartheid laws. I mean, his existence, being the child of a black Xhosa mother and a white Swiss-German father, was itself an act of defiance against a system built on keeping races apart. So you see, this isn't just your standard celebrity memoir, not at all. It's really a story about resilience, about humor as a weapon, and maybe most importantly, about a mother's incredible, almost rebellious love.
It really is a stunning book. And that's our source today, this incredibly rich memoir from 2016. It does this amazing thing, blending sharp humor, real wit, with some very deep social commentary. He chronicles this childhood that was, frankly, terrifying in many ways, but also somehow full of joy and connection. He paints this picture of apartheid South Africa that's just so vivid, so immersive.
Absolutely. The way he tells it just pulls you right in. Okay, so let's set the scene. Trevor Noah, born February 20, 1984. Most of us know him now as the South African comedian, host, writer, especially from The Daily Show, right?
Yeah.
But his story, the one in this book, starts way, way before that.
Oh, definitely. And the significance of his birth, like you said, you really can't overstate it. Born in Johannesburg. Black Xhosa mother, Patricia, white Swiss-German father, Robert. During apartheid, this made his birth flat out illegal under the Immorality Act of 1927. That law specifically banned interracial relationships. So yeah, from day one, his life was against the rules. His story, it's personal, of course, but it also shines this bright light on the damage of institutionalized racism. But crucially, it also shows the power of things like education and his mother's fierce love and maybe surprisingly humor. And at its heart, as you read it, you realize it's fundamentally a love letter to his mother, Patricia.
That context is so key. So let's trace his journey chronologically because it really shows how these forces shaped him. His early life, starting in 84, was basically an act of rebellion from the start. His mother, Patricia Nambuizolo Noah, and his father, Robert Harry, they knew the risks, huge risks. And Trevor's identity as mixed race or colored, as the specific apartheid category went, which was separate from black or white, kind of his own difficult space, it put him in this incredibly dangerous position. Like nowhere and everywhere at once, always navigating between worlds that weren't supposed to mix.
And Patricia's way of handling this was just remarkable. So much secrecy, so much careful planning. She'd often have to hide him in public, sometimes walk on the other side of the street, pretend he wasn't hers, just to avoid the authorities. She was incredibly intelligent, fiercely determined, and her faith, she used it not passively, but actively as a kind of liberating force. She made sure Trevor was exposed to different worlds, languages, cultures. She knew instinctively, perhaps, that adaptability, understanding different people, that would be his key survival tool.
And what a tool it became. This superpower of language, as he calls it. He became fluent in English, Xhosa, Zulu, Sotho, Afrikaans. Just amazing. It made him a chameleon, not just words, right? It gave him this incredible mental agility. He could code switch instantly, navigate almost any group, understand them from the inside, critically important later. There's that amazing story in the book, isn't there, about him being maybe 9 or 10, facing down some potential muggers.
Yes.
And he just starts speaking Zulu to them. And suddenly, that connection through language completely changes the dynamic. It bypasses the racial tension, turns threats into, well, not friends exactly, but not enemies.
It's such a perfect example of how language can connect, especially in that kind of divided society. And his very early years spent in Soweto, that huge township, a product of segregation itself. A place of hardship, yes, but also incredible community spirit. He lived there with his grandmother, Coco, deeply religious woman, loved him immensely, but as he tells it, she was actually afraid to physically discipline him. Why? Because his mixed-race skin bruised differently. Marks could give away the secret, reveal their crime to neighbors, or worse, the police. The threat was constant. That constant sense of danger, it just hangs over everything.
Yeah.
Okay, fast forward a bit. 1994. Apartheid ends. Trevor's 10. New freedoms arrive, sure, but those deep social lines, they don't just disappear overnight. In fact, things got complicated in new ways. He talks about going to these newly integrated Model C schools, formerly white schools, often better resourced, but he was still an outsider. Not quite black enough for the black kids, obviously not white. But he found his way, didn't he? By becoming the tuck shop guy.
Mm-hmm. Running errands, getting lunches for everyone, jocks, nerds, all the cliques. It was like his first business, learning how different groups worked.
And that entrepreneurial spirit, that hustle, it clearly stuck with him. It really defined his teenage years. Living in townships like Eden Park, Alexandria, these dense, often poor urban areas, he started these little side businesses. Selling pirated CDs was a big one, DJing at street parties. It wasn't just about making money, though. It was about survival, finding a way in a world with few legitimate paths open to him. And this period, you know, it really sharpened his skills, understanding people, risk, basic economics, reading a crowd, navigating tricky situations. It was all laying the groundwork.
But that life, the hustle, it had sharp edges, very real dangers. He talks about that awful week he spent in jail, falsely accused of stealing a car, basically.
Right.
And it was just a brutal wake-up call, seeing the inside of the justice system, how easily you could get crushed. He showed how thin that line was between hustling to survive and, well, real trouble.
And running alongside all of this, there was another really dark element emerging in their lives, the domestic violence from his stepfather, Abel. This became this awful, pervasive thing, deeply impacting Trevor, and especially his mother. It wasn't just physical, it was the control, the manipulation. He writes very honestly about the struggle to understand how his strong mother could be trapped in that.
That's such a critical piece. It adds this whole other layer of threat, doesn't it? Beyond the systemic stuff of apartheid, there's this deeply personal terror right at home. How did he say that shaped his view of things? Of relationships, maybe?
Well, it created this constant underlying anxiety, I think. A feeling of needing to protect his mother, confusion about what healthy relationships even looked like. It definitely fueled his observations about power dynamics, vulnerability. You see those themes in his comedy later. He saw how violence could break someone's spirit, but also, incredibly, how his mother fought tooth and nail to hold on to hers.
That's vital context. Now, it's important to note, the book really focuses on how he became the person he is, not so much the celebrity trajectory. His rise in the memoir isn't about TV deals. It's about graduating from that street life, realizing his potential, finding his voice.
Exactly. All those experiences being the chameleon, the DJ, the hustler, they weren't just things that happened to him. They became the raw material for his comedy. He learned to observe, adapt, read the room, to find the absurdity and the tragedy, the humor and the contradictions. That outsider perspective gave him this unique analytical lens.
And the book builds towards this absolutely shattering climax. Abel shooting Patricia, his mother. It's just horrifying to read. But what's almost more astounding, expert, is her reaction after surviving, isn't it?
Oh, completely. It's unbelievable. Trevor rushes to her. She's been shot miraculously alive, and her first words are a joke.
Yeah.
My son, you must look on the bright side. Now you're officially the best-looking person in the family. I mean, who does that?
Incredible.
It was this profound moment for Trevor, seeing not just survival, but that defiant spirit, that resilience, that faith in action. It absolutely solidified his understanding of her strength and really pushed him into a new level of maturity. He saw her essence distilled.
Okay, so let's dig a bit deeper now, beyond the timeline. This idea of being born a crime.
Yeah.
How did that fundamentally shape his worldview, his identity? It led to what you called his chameleon ethos, right?
Yes, exactly. This idea that identity isn't fixed. It's fluid, it's contextual, it's even strategic. For him, it started as pure survival, but it became this powerful way to connect and understand different groups.
And language was the key to that.
Absolutely central. He basically says language, even more than skin color, tells people who you are. Speak someone's language, and suddenly you can bridge those divides. Apartheid works so hard to create, so identity becomes this dynamic toolbox. You pick the right tool, the right language, the right cultural understanding for the situation. It let him move through spaces designed to keep him out. And humor. Humor wasn't just for laughs. It became analytical, a way to break down power, expose absurdity, a skill, he makes clear, he learned directly from his mother's quick wit.
That connection between the street smarts, the chameleon thing, and the comedy is fascinating. Yeah. Was the humor just observation, do you think? Or was it also a conscious way to cope?
I think it was definitely both. Initially, for him and his mother, it was coping, finding light. But as he got older, it became strategic. Humor can disarm people. It can let you say tough things without alienating everyone. It can build bridges. So survival first, then strategy.
Right. And that connects to his critique of systems, doesn't it? That famous give a man a fish analogy he builds on.
Yes. He takes the proverb, Give a man a fish, feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, feed him for a lifetime. And adds his lair. First, and it would be nice if you gave him a fishing rod. Okay, fair enough. Tools matter. But then he pushes further. What about access to the river? Who owns the rod factory? Who controls the whole system? It's a brilliant critique of surface level help versus tackling the real structural barriers.
Such a sharp insight. So thinking about what drove him, his motivations, how did those change over time?
Well, early on, it had to be pure survival, right? Getting by, putting food on the table, basic needs in a tough environment. Then, as an outsider, there was clearly this deep yearning to belong, to find his place somewhere. But underlying it all, especially as he gets older, is this powerful drive to make his mother proud, to justify the immense sacrifices she made for him. That becomes a huge motivator.
So facing all of that adversity, the poverty, the racism, the violence, how did he approach it? Was it just grit or something else? Something learned?
It feels like more than just grit, though there was plenty of that. His approach seems very analytical, very observant. He'd break problems down, watch, adapt, strategize. Humor, as we said, was key for coping, for taking back control of the narrative. And then there's that resilience he clearly inherited from Patricia, that refusal to be defined as a victim. She taught him, through example, to never just accept your circumstances. Always push, always find a way.
Okay, as we look back, there are these moments that just jump out, aren't there? Real turning points that shifted everything for him. What were the big ones you saw in the memoir?
Definitely three stand out. First, that terrifying incident you mentioned earlier, being thrown from a moving car.
Right.
His mother literally throwing him, then herself, out of a minibus taxi because the driver was threatening them. He was only 9. It wasn't just the scare, it was potentially lethal.
The impact of that must have been massive. What did he take from it?
It was this incredibly raw lesson, wasn't it, about his mother's fierce, almost primal protective love, her radical pragmatism, do whatever it takes to survive, and the sheer unpredictability of the violence around them. It showed him survival sometimes needs drastic action and that his mother would risk absolutely everything for him.
Then there's the story of finding his father, Robert, again. After years apart because of the laws, Trevor seeks him out as a teenager, and that reunion. Robert reveals he'd been quietly following Trevor's life all along, keeping this detailed photo album.
That was hugely healing for Trevor. It filled this gap, the sense of abandonment he maybe hadn't even fully articulated. It validated his white heritage, which had always been a source of confusion. It showed him love could exist quietly, persistently across distance, gave him this crucial sense of belonging, of being seen and valued by his father.
And the third one, the arrest.
Yeah, the arrest and that week in jail, driving a car with dodgy plates, a hustle gone wrong. That experience in the holding cell, navigating that dangerous environment, having to buy protection, that seems like the ultimate wake-up call. The moment the hustle collided head-on with the brutal reality of the system, it scared him straight, basically. Showed him the dead end that path could lead to. It really pushed him to find a different way, a more legitimate outlet for his intelligence and talents.
So weaving all this together, this incredible, challenging life, what are the big human lessons we can take away? Things that resonate for us now?
Well, one powerful idea is that identity is flexible. It's a toolbox, like we said, not a cage. Trevor used his multifaceted identity strategically. It suggests we can also embrace complexity in who we are, not be confined by simple labels.
And resilience stands out so much. It's clearly an active choice he learned from his mother. Not about not suffering, but about consciously choosing to move forward, find meaning, even humor, despite it all. Patricia's refusal to be beaten down is just inspiring.
Absolutely. And another key lesson, you can't understand personal stories without understanding the systems they happen within. Trevor's life makes no sense without understanding apartheid, poverty, social structures. It reminds us to look beyond the individual to the context.
And maybe the most powerful one. Love is rebellion. Patricia's choice to have Trevor, to love him fiercely in a world designed to erase him, was revolutionary. It shows how profound love can be a force against oppression.
Okay, let's wrap up our deep dive with three final takeaways. Crystal clear points from this amazing story.
All right. First, an emotional insight. Real love often demands incredible sacrifice and strategic thinking. Patricia Noah's life wasn't just about feeling love. It was about acting on it, planning, protecting, committing to his potential with everything she had. Love is fierce action.
And an intellectual insight. Systemic oppression works by shrinking not just opportunities, but imagination itself. That quote you mentioned, you can only dream of what you can imagine. Your imagination can be quite limited. That's huge. Injustice steals futures by limiting what people even believe is possible for themselves.
And finally, a universal insight. What makes you different can be both burden and asset. Trevor's crime, his mixed heritage, was dangerous under apartheid. But that very identity became his unique strength, his perspective, the foundation of his success, turning a supposed weakness into undeniable power.
It's so much to think about. We really hope this conversation makes you reflect on your own ideas about identity, resilience, and how love can fight injustice. And honestly, if you haven't read Born a Crime, we can't recommend it enough. The humor, the heartbreak, the wisdom, it's all there.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe a final thought. In our often divided world, Trevor's story offers this really interesting model, building identity through connection, through empathy, through really listening.
Yeah.
Using your unique background not to build walls, but to build bridges.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We look forward to exploring another fascinating topic with you again soon. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.